This is Hacker Public Radio episode 3388 for Wednesday, the 28th of July 2021. Today's show is entitled Linux in Laws S01E35. The Free Software Foundation Europe and is part of the series Linux in Laws. It is hosted by Monochromic and is about 78 minutes long and carries an explicit flag. The summary is an interview with Matthias Kirschner, Free Software Foundation Europe.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
This is Linux in Laws, a podcast on topics around free and open source software, any associated contraband, communism, the revolution in general, and whatever fancies your tickle. Please note that this and other episodes may contain strong language, offensive humor, and other certainly not politically correct language. You have been warned. Our parents insisted on this disclaimer. Happy Mom! Thus, the content is not suitable for consumption in the workplace, especially when played back in an open plan office or similar environments. Any minors under the age of 35 or any pets including fluffy little killer bunnies, your trusty guide dog, unless on speed, and cute T-Rexes or other associated dinosaurs. This is Linux in Laws, Season 1, Episode 36, the Free Software Foundation Europe. Martin, how are things?
Yeah, things are great. We have sunshine and warmth and travel restrictions.
Ah, okay. Hang on. Is it August the 13th at 12 o'clock p.m. already?
No. Then it would be raining, so yeah. It's before that, definitely.
Did the Met office move this summer? In Great Britain. I'm just checking this out.
It's a little bit later this year, indeed.
Okay.
And how are you today?
Can't complain. I'm more than excited to have actually the Free Software Foundation
indeed.
Europe as part on this podcast. A guy called Matthias Kirschner, who plays a very pivotal role at said foundation. Matthias, please introduce yourself.
Hello. Yes. Thanks for having me here. My name is Matthias Kirschner, and yeah, I'm the president of the Free Software Foundation Europe.
It's simple as that. Because everybody knows what the Free Software Foundation and the Free Software Foundation Europe is, we don't have to explain that. No, joke aside, for the two listeners of the podcast that do not know, out of the three that are normally listening, that do not know what the Free Software Foundation and the Free Software Foundation Europe is, maybe Matthias, you can shed a little bit of light on these two organizations, their history and their differences, of course.
Of course. So the Free Software Foundation, that's our American sister organization. They were found in 1985 as the first Free Software Foundation. That was from the... So first in 1983, there was the GNU project, which was started to build a complete free operating system so that all components of this operating system allow the users to use the software for any purpose, to share it with others, to study the source code and to improve it further, the software. And so they started with the GNU project on a technical basis. They set up the Free Software Foundation as a legal entity to accept donations and to be able to sell software. And then later in 2001, the Free Software Foundation Europe was founded. And we were founded as an independent sister organization, so there are no financial or personal overlaps about those two organizations. And the organization was founded to build, like the aim was to build a network, a Free Software Foundation network, so that each of those organizations are working for the same goals, going to the same direction, but can then, based on cultural backgrounds, approach this a little bit differently in their area. And so in 2001, the FSFE was founded. So this year we are celebrating our 20th birthday. And and since then, the Free Software Foundation Europe is working to promote software freedom in Europe. We are a charitable organization, and we have so our main mission is to empower users to control technology. So that's the rough overview, but. Let me know if I should go deeper into the different work areas and this.
Sure. Yeah, I'm sure we'll come to that in a minute. But I was just going to ask a question on your first description. I mean, understand the cultural differences between the US and Europe quite intimately myself. But so I think you mentioned that you are completely independent and have your own governing body and all the kind of things. Do you have any kind of coordination as well in terms of programs or messaging that you put out?
So, I mean, usually it works like that we interact with each other, so that like the executive director at the FSF is then talking with myself at the FSFE. We talk about different projects going on, let us know about what is upcoming, and then have also discussions and bring people in contact when there is something coming up. There have also been some times where this cooperation, I mean, sometimes it works better, sometimes it works less good, depending on who is at the moment working on what and how much time they have available, and if there is at the moment common interest on some topics, or if at the moment they focus a little bit on different areas. So that's the main cooperation there. The main part which keeps the organizations together is the same vision, the same idea where we want to go, that users should be empowered to control technology. And then on some of those aspects, there is then cooperation there. There are meetings between the organizations, but as there are no overlapping staff or other like financial, like joint project where financials are distributed or so, it's a little bit looser than you might see in some other organizations.
Okay. Yeah, no, it sounds like you have a lot of freedom in terms of what you do in Europe, and then there is no direct organizational link, right? It's purely on a conversational basis. And is there a similar kind of organization in Asia, perhaps, or that you're aware of? I'm not personally.
So, I mean, from the official FSFs, there is the Free Software Foundation in India, and the Free Software Foundation Latin America.
Okay.
The Free Software Foundation Europe and the FSF, they are the two organizations who also have staff and so also larger finances to pay people to work on those goals. The others are volunteer organizations at the moment.
Right. So you can presumably achieve more as well with permanent staff, I imagine. Okay. And so you mentioned the empowering people to control technology piece there. So that comes down to the basis of why the FSF and the FSFE exist. But do you want to expand on that a little bit more? Because, I mean, if we talk about technology and people being able to, empower mm-hmm. people to control it, then okay, we are of a generation that we're all used to using technology and computers and all that kind of stuff, right? But let's say, Chris's grandma, she probably hasn't seen a computer in her life from up close. So is that something
she has? You're... but it's a different story.
she probably was pushed on in front of her nose by Chris. She said, "What is this thing here?"
I mean, actually, that's very good. The question about that is very close to our mission statement in general. Then it's, I mean, we are living in a world where software is deeply involved in all aspects of our life, and it's becoming more and more and more and not less at the moment. Mm-hmm. And that's why it's important that this technology empowers people rather than restricts them. And our belief is that free software gives everybody the right to use, study, share, and improve software. This then also helps to support other fundamental rights in society, like freedom of speech, freedom of press, or privacy. And so it's, I mean, when I talk to people who are not so deep into the technology, I often explain it also that, I mean, we have, in a democratic society, you distribute power. So you have different institutions like the judiciary, the legislation, legislators, and the executive. You have different layers in government, like federal, states, regions, or however they are called. And so there is some a checks and balances between those institutions. And that's something which is a big element for democracies. Now, when we are living now in a world where more and more of things around us are decided by computer and by software, and there are computers all around us, then we also need to distribute the power over those over the software to make sure that this distribution of power is not just in the institutions, but and they all depend on the same people supplying the software to them, and they can take decisions, but it's important that all these institutions can also make their own decisions, and that you have a distribution there between the institutions and between all the users out there. So there is no central point where someone can decide what can all the people out there do and what are they not allowed to do with technology.
This is very close to an original statement I read ages ago from a guy called Richard Stallman. Maybe now is the time to go back in history a little bit and to go into a little bit of detail where the FSF and, of course, subsequently the FSFE came from, and the overall mission behind what is pretty close, A, to my heart, and B, almost, I'm tempted to say, to communism. Because at the end of the day, we're talking about distributing knowledge, power, ideas, and that ideas should be free, so should be software.
I mean, so first of all, I'm not sure. To my memory, Richard didn't bring up this relation with the distribution of power. So, I mean, his main argumentation there is that users should be empowered, but it's more about like, he connects a lot of those topics to the freedom of speech. So that's why also a lot of times it was like free software, free as in free speech, not as in free beer. It was one of the explanations which he did there. I think it's free software is something which you cannot put into one of the other systems like communism or capitalism or liberalism or
I probably should have added the caveat. Communism is, of course, my personal interpretation of the matter. But then I'm a communist at heart, and sorry about the oversight. Sorry, go ahead, Matthias.
Yeah, so I think it's something where it is about empowering the people, the users, to do what they think is the right thing to do, so that they can, that they are not restricted by software, but that they can change the software to what they want to do and not have to do what someone else decided through the software what they have to do. And so that is something which fits into the thinking of many different people. I mean, there are people who identify themselves as communists who say that, well, free software, that's fitting there. You can talk with people who say, yeah, they identify as capitalists and say free software, that's important because there you really have a market. And it's not like when you bought one product A, B, or C, that afterwards you are in a service monopoly on what you have, and that free software is important for a free market with competition, less monopolies. So you see this, you have other people arguing that free software is the solution for anarchism. You have others who connect free software to different religions and explain you why, if you believe in this religion, free software is the right thing to do. So I think it's really difficult to put free software in one of those boxes. So does that make sense?
It does indeed. Yes. The thing is that there is something called the open source initiative in terms of the definition of open source. Maybe for some of our listeners who are not familiar with the OSI definition, maybe we should touch upon this briefly, because I think the FSF and the FSFE and the OSI share certain goals in that respect. You mentioned some of the aspects already. Full teaser, there's an upcoming episode, or there was an episode about 2 episodes ago on open source licenses. For those people who missed this, maybe Matthias, now is the time to recap some of the OSI goals for open source software.
Okay, so, I mean, there are, I would say, 3 different definitions out there about free software or open source software. And so the free software definition mainly says, explains it in a way that I am doing, like that you can use, study, share, and improve software, and you have those rights to do those. And if one of those rights is missing, then it's not free software. Then, so this term was introduced in 1983 and then afterwards developed into those 4 freedoms in a definition that's maintained by the Free Software Foundation, or sister organization. And then you have an organization like like Debian and the Open Source Initiative, and they have a longer explanation about what is free software, or in their case, they call it then open source software. And that's then a longer list. And I have to say, I always had difficulties to remember all of those points. So that's something which is, I think, always difficult to remember a longer list of things you have to, how exactly it is defined. So, but the OSI definition, it's mainly that you have a free distribution, the source code is available, you have you can do derived works, there's an integrity of the author source code, there is no discrimination against persons or groups, there is no discrimination against fields of endeavor. There is a distribution of licenses, of the license. The license must not be specific to a product, and it must not restrict other software, and the license must be technology neutral. So those are the 10 points there. But I have to say, most of the time I have to look them up because I can't remember those 10 points. It's in the end something that is something that is also included in those 4 freedoms of the free software definition. And so I think it's way easier to remember, like, you study, share, and improve, and then deduct from that everybody is can, for any purpose, without any restrictions, without reading or agreeing on any license term, use the software. You can share the software without limitations and help others, or do that also for the self-benefit by making money with it. You can study it, analyze and discuss the software, and for improving it, you can modify and adapt to fit your and others' needs. So it's in the end, it's then deducted from those 4 points. And to get back to that, I mean, the Free Software Foundation, mainly Richard Stallman defined those freedoms there. And then later in 1998, the Open Source Initiative was founded, and they wanted to find a term for free software that they can better, better use when they are talking in the commercial context. And so that was brought up as a marketing term for free software.
Okay.
That's why we also use those two terms. They are synonyms for the same software. So I mean, when the FSF and the OSI look at the different licenses, and the FSF looks, is this a free software license? And the OSI will ask the question, is that an open source license? They will always, almost always come to the same conclusion. There are very few times when there was a different decision there about licenses, which honestly, I think don't matter. So,
an interesting trait, and that has been very insightful, Matthias, but an interesting trait of this whole setup is the unrestricted use of software, of free and open source software, I should add. There has been a little bit of controversy over the last 5 to 7 years around this. Few companies, for example, came up with something called the Common Clause, and the subsequent, well, for want of a better expression, controversy to avoid the term shitstorm, tells its own tale. Any thoughts on this?
So, I mean, as long as the FSFE was working on these topics, we saw that, I mean, first, there are more and more companies understand why free software is good for them and how they can benefit by using free software and by basing their products on free software. And then some of them, they are running into some problems about the about their business models. So, I mean, one of the big advantages I see with free software is that you have to be very good, and you have to be really good at fulfilling the user's demands that people stick with you. So, and then it's easy. Other people can set up competing offers to what you are doing when you're doing free software. And so I can understand that there are some companies who then try to include other clauses, other restrictions to the software so that it's easier for them to make money with the software. And yeah, the problem there is then when this is done in a way which is then restricting those one or some of the rights which should be there in a free software license. And so that's why then there is this problem then that there is then software out there where they say it's free software, it's open source software, while when you have a closer look, you will then find out that some of the terms in their licenses restrict some of those rights you would expect to get from a free software license.
As Chris mentioned, we have a episode on on open source licensing, but I mean the point is kind of twofold, right? Is one is organizations making money off free software because it's available, it's free, and or in terms of your definitions. But by the other token, the development of those software products or projects, whatever you want to however you want to define them, those don't benefit nearly as much from those. And so the point I'm making here is really that there isn't much of a financial incentive for the actual developers themselves, except when a project or a piece of software is being productized and monetized through an organization, right? So how do you see that? You know, we had several people talking on this subject. I wanted to have what your opinion was on how this could be more sustainable in terms of keeping those projects going and to the quality level that they need as well. Right?
Hmm. So, I mean, just to clarify on that point, the FSFE, we always encourage people to ask for money for what they are doing. So if you are developing free software, we think it's good for the sustainability if you can base a business model on this, so that you are paid for it, so that the work of maintaining a software over a longer time, that you can actually do this, that you have the resources to work on this for a longer time. We have seen that way too often, that some people started something, it's included in all kind of solutions, a lot of larger companies depend on this software. But there is no, it's not made sure that people actually have the time to work on those and make sure that they are properly maintained for how that software is used meanwhile. And I think the one thing I often notice is that people confuse free software or open source software with business models. And you often hear people talking about the open source business model. And I think we should really clearly separate there. Free software, it's not a business model. Neither is open source. You have business models that work with free software or open source software. And which of those work and work not, that depends on many different other factors. In general, I would say that all business models out there, except selling licenses, work for proprietary software as well as for free software. Depending on the exact case and the specifics of a certain area, some things work better and some things work worse. And it will always be the case that it's not so much about the software and if you publish it under a free software license or under proprietary software license, which will decide if you will be successful or not. But there are many, many different factors if you will be successful with your business or not. And I think that's something which I think it's good if you clearly differ between those things. Just because you publish some software under a free software license does not mean that people will throw money at you. And neither does, even if you have a very cool software solution for a problem, it doesn't mean that you will get money for that. There are many different factors. And even if you do everything right, you might fail while someone else at another time in history will afterwards be rich. And so I think that's one of the things that's very important, not to confuse free software as a software model of what rights you get with business model or a development model.
Yeah, that's a nice explanation there. I mean, that kind of ties in a little bit to the point one of our previous guests made is that some of the funding for these projects should come from public money. And I think you've got a similar kind of project going yourselves at the FSFE at the moment.
Is that correct? Yes. So we started the campaign framework, Public Money, Public Code. And there our goal is that publicly financed software should be published under a free software license. So we believe that if money from taxpayers is used to develop software afterwards, everybody should benefit from that again. And so there are several other benefits there as well, that, for example, public administrations can better work together. So you might also then have some tax savings there by not developing everything up from scratch again. And the most important point there is that they should be more sovereign about their own infrastructure and should be able to decide what they as a public institution want to do, and based on their considerations, and not just about what veto or what decisions might be prevented from some other company just because they are developing the software. And so we have this public money, public code campaign. And when you go to publiccode.eu, there is an overview of the different arguments why we think that publicly financed software should be published as free software. We have videos there in several different languages, which can be used by organization or individuals out there to promote free software in the area of public administrations. There are some other resources like a brochure for people who are more interested than decision makers who want to know more about free software. You can hand that over to them. You can order those brochures from us as well. They are available in some languages. And there is also an open letter. So to ask decision makers to implement this. So to all of those here listening. So I hope that afterwards all of you sign this open letter, and we have those three, or was it two listeners, two signatures more.
how many are we looking for? Yeah.
So indeed. Yeah. And the idea with this is that we are providing resources so that every group out there around the world who wants to promote for this, and every individual who wants to approach their school, their university, their library, their local public administration, and so on, that they have resources available to make it easy to do this. We offer like workshops for people to understand how to best work with those resources. And so the idea is that we want to empower all the others out there to further promote free software in this context.
Interesting topic. And of course, the links to that particular letter will be in the show notes, rest assured. Changing tack slightly, Richard M. Stallman, who's of course one of the founding fathers of the movement, let's put it this way, has been under, what's the diplomatic way of putting this, under a little bit of controversy lately. And I'm not talking about the controversy about Linux versus GNU/Linux, but rather the Epstein, how can I put this, controversy and the subsequent signature lists on GitHub about kicking him out of the FSF, and then subsequently, of course, the re-instantiation of said Mr. Stallman on the board of the FSF. Maybe, given the fact that the FSFE has issued a statement, maybe you can elaborate a little bit on this, also including maybe perhaps the background, because I'm not too sure if all of our listeners know about the controversy, and also perhaps shed some more light on the background of the FSFE statement on this controversy.
Okay, yeah, very difficult to do that in a few words.
Take your time.
So, so Richard Stallman, the year before he stepped down after there was a public controversy. I think it's still something which many different people have different understandings what this was about, and it's very difficult to explain that. But I think that's something where some people might have to do their own research and make up their own mind why that exactly happened. And then after he has resigned from the board, then in March this year, he announced that he joined the FSF board again, And that was something which we ourselves just learned through the public announcement by Richard Stallman, that he is part of the board of directors again of our sister organization. And while we disapproved this step, which for us also came as without any message of remorse or willingness to change or like acknowledging what happened there and how people felt about that. And so that was something which was then inside the FSFE. We had very long discussions about all of that. And I have to say that the statement we put out there, which you find on fsfe.org/news, search there for a statement on Richard Stallman. It was quite some effort to phrase something in a way where in the end everybody could say, I approve this and I'm fine that this is our position. So that's also why this is really difficult for me now to say that again in my own words, as that was really something where we were arguing about different words at different how to say this exactly, where to put the commas and so on. So it's really difficult for me to summarize that better. I think the main point is, I mean, what we said then in this statement is that we think it's important that you recognize and reflect when other people were offended or harmed by your actions and consider this feedback in your further actions. And that was something which we were missing in there, and that is something where we were really disappointed and where we felt that this is harmful for the FSFs and for the free software movement.
I mean, there has been a lot of controversy around this, ranging from a self-admitting Mr. Stallman that he's bipolar is a way too strong word, but maybe borderline autistic. I don't know. I'm fishing for words here, because A, I'm not a psychologist, and B, I've only met Richard once or twice. And there are certain people who say, to Mike's, in my opinion, to some extent true, that his social protocols or his social skills are somewhat lacking, fair enough. On the other side, his contribution to the movement cannot be underestimated, because initially, of course, he came up with this whole notion when he was still studying at MIT, looking at the source code and then coming up with the idea that this source code that runs machines should be free. So it's a tricky one, let's put it this way. And I fully understand that there are, I don't know what the current number is, but the last time I looked at the signature list on GitHub, they were kind of clocking in at maybe five, maybe six digits. So the controversy runs high even in the community. So I reckon, but to the best of my knowledge, he hasn't stepped down, right? So he's still a member of the FSF board that has rejoined for the time being. Yes. If I'm completely mistaken, yes.
To my knowledge, that's right, yes. I mean, it's just to make, to clarify on that point, that because that was one point where I think several people might have misunderstood our statement a little bit. So the contribution Richard Stallman made for the free software movement, especially in the beginning on defining the four freedoms and explaining all of the different topics in his several articles, that's something which that's why this movement was started, and it's a huge value. And I think that's something which, I mean, at least for the FSFE, I know it, but also several people who signed one of those statements, they see this as something that that is a huge value there. And it's also, I mean, for myself, I mean, his writings, they have been the reason why I was convinced that this is such an important topic that I want to dedicate a large amount of my life to work on those issues and help to improve society on this and make sure that the users are empowered there. And so that's something which is, I think you cannot underestimate the significance he had for the free software movement and for the future of our societies by having started all of that. And I think what we see there is a bit the issue about how much connected our ideas and actions of people in one area with the person and other personal views on other topics. I mean, you also see that sometimes in debates about like there is a great picture and people love that picture and it's displayed in all museums, but then there is some information about what that artist also did beside painting that picture. And then there is a discussion about what should be done there. Is it now something that all the things that person did in one area, is that now all wrong because the person did something in another area which several people disagree with? What do you do there? I mean, that's one of the issues that's true for so many people who defined important ideas, started important movements in our society that you later learned, or even still at the time learned, that in some other areas of life they behave in a way that you disapprove. How do you deal with that? That's I think a very, very difficult question.
It's a very interesting point in terms of how do you, is the person the idea or are they two separated, right? It's something similar in politics, or specifically in places like the US and UK to some degree is, you know, people are not actually voting for the party or the ideas sometimes, but more for the person that's representing them rather than the other way around. It's an interesting dilemma that exists in many areas, but yeah. Mm-hmm. I wanted to change the subject a little bit because we kind of didn't really get into the story about how you ended up at FSFE and what your background is. If you wouldn't mind sharing a little bit because it's obviously it's an important position that you are in now. And how did you decide to join? How did it all come about, basically?
So I was always interested in politics, and I was asking my father to subscribe to more newspapers so that I don't just get information from one of them, but that I can better make up my own mind there. And my father at that time said, well, he read something about this internet and he doesn't want to spend all this money on the newspapers. So he will get another computer with an internet connection. So he bought a computer with a modem, and through that decision, I was luckily one of the first people in my class there who had internet access. And I think in hindsight, it would have been cheaper for my father to subscribe to the newspapers. But so that was the start that I got this computer, and then there was a time that I got another computer, which wasn't used by the company my father was working for anymore. And so we had two computers at home, and I connected them with a network cable. And then I saw that there are email programs on both of those computers. And I thought, like, hey, it would be cool if I could send an email to my brother sitting at the other computer. And I was not able to do that. Also, there were the email programs there without connecting to the internet. I was not able to send a message from one of those computers to the other. And so I complained at school, and there was actually one person who said, like, I have something for you. And at one of the next days, he brought me some CDs and floppies. And that was then my first GNU Linux distribution. So I installed that. It took me quite a while with this friend on the phone. And after some time, I was able to boot up the system, no graphical user interface, just some white fonts on some black background. And it took me quite a while till I got the graphical, the graphics working. In that time, I already started to think that it's actually quite cool to use this. So I also sticked afterwards to a lot of terminal programs there. So that was how I then got into this. And I then talked a lot with this friend at school about free software. We started setting up a local free software group. We organized install parties and then participated at free software events together. And over the time, I didn't realize that this whole topic, when discovering the GNU.org websites and reading the GNU GPL and reading several of the articles by Richard, then I realized that actually, I mean, this is very political topic as well. It's not just about the technology, which I loved. And I mean, you could learn anything. You could have long discussions on mailing lists and so many people with so much knowledge sharing this with you. That was incredible. I thought, like, but it's also a very significant political topic. And somehow at that time, I thought that while with the technical topics, there are so many people out there who help you to understand it, it's very difficult to understand the political systems. And that's why at that time I decided that I study political sciences. So I studied public and political and administrative sciences. That was the idea that I start with that, so I can there learn this part, and the other part I can continue to do that with great people groups on several platforms, mailing lists. And during the studies, I continued with also in a free software, in a local free software user group, and going to conferences. And and then there was a time during the studies where you had to do a practical semester. And that was the time when I asked some Debian developers whom I know, like, where could I go? And they made several suggestions. And one of those was also there's the Free Software Foundation Europe. And when I then discovered the website and looked deeper into it, I thought, like, that's the perfect fit.
Definitely.
So I was then contacting them about doing an internship, and they told me, well, we never had interns. And there was some back and forth. There were a lot of arguments why this could not happen. And after some back and forth, they wrote me like, okay, you have been so persistent. We think we should give you the chance to at least have a job interview. And, then we met and started talking about this, and after a short time I knew that I want to do it. And the president at that time, Georg Rewe, also later told me that yes, let's take this opportunity. And then so I ended up then working in Hamburg in his one room apartment. I was sitting at the sofa, he was sitting at the desk next to the bed, because there was no office of the FSFE at that time. And I started with the internship, and then afterwards FSFE said, like, it would be great if someone could do some lobby work in Berlin. We don't have someone there. And then I moved to Berlin and continued my studies there. and worked as a volunteer for. So when I joined as an intern, that was in 2004 to 2005. Then I volunteered for some years, and in 2009, I was then employed and started the Berlin office. Yeah,
amazing. So because you heard it here first. One of the most influential people on a European level looking after free and open source software is still a hacker at heart. No wonder. No wonder, Matthias. Full disclosure, the last time we met in person, that was actually the FSFE hackathon at the CCC in Frankfurt, right? About 2 years ago or something. You remember when we all gather in that office, including Michael Weimer. Michael, if you're listening, still full marks. And then basically when we ventured outside and got that pizza, remember, with the cheap red wine that the place threw in for free. And you were wondering about receipts and stuff. Maybe it was me. I can't remember.
Is this where you want to cut the story short? What happens next?
I don't remember the specifics at the moment, but that I take care about the receipts. That it makes sense, even if I don't remember.
I mean, all of the VIPs of the FSFE were there for this website hackathon. I think that was 2019 or 2018. I can't even remember. But I mean, we picked the place, and it was the, of course, Chaos Computer Club in Frankfurt. They sponsored the venue, and about, 20, maybe 30 people turned up. And yes, there must be a photo, because it was the day of the towel, right? It was Global Towels Day or something. And that was the first, if you remember, that was the photo we took. Before it all started to go south, or whatever you want to call it, as people really shucking in terms of producing lines of code for the FSFE website. But trip down memory lane. Martin, I'm sure you had another question too.
No, I was just interested in what happened after the pizza. Yeah. Apart from...
We cannot disclose this, of course.
Usually after the pizza, I mean, at the webathons I participated for the FSFE web team, they most of the time then continue to either work on those topics or at least discuss this or discuss other free software topics in the evening. So
I think till
very lately. Yeah.
I think I left around midnight or something, but see, people were still working on the website.
Yeah, that's something which, I mean, for me is one of the greatest things doing working for the Free Software Foundation Europe, that we as an organization, we have a large community with so many volunteers who spend so much time on those topics. And I mean, then being in the position of doing this in a full-time capacity, then being paid for it, that's such an honor. Then seeing how many people then do this in their free time and spend the evenings or the weekends working for those goals together. That's something of one of the parts in my work, which is the most fulfilling part there, that we have so many people who constantly work on those topics for such a long time. And even in times when, I mean, I think one of the things in the FSFE's work is that it's very difficult to get fast successes. So a lot of the things we work on, it depends on long-term work and being patient, being persistent. So that's something which needs also some certain kind of person to spend so much time over a longer period to accomplish things there. And I mean, there are also, of course, there are some activities where you can also participate without investing too much time. But I mean, there are so many within the FSFE who I would like to see a counter of the work time there. It's incredible how much some contribute there. So
I mean, granted, without these volunteers, the FSFE would probably be a different place. Normally we do the call to action at the very end, but Matthias, if you want to pitch the FSFE and if I'm a membership, in terms of, no, you don't have to be a member, but if you want to contribute work, Matthias, now is the time. Go ahead.
Yes. So, I mean, for us, it's really crucial to have people contributing. And as you said, it's, I mean, the FSFE would be a completely different organization if we would just be staff doing some work for free software. We are doing this work in that way because there are so many different volunteers with so many different backgrounds contributing their part to make this successful. And so that's why, if you now give me the opportunity,
absolutely, go ahead.
If you want to, please go to fsfe.org/contribute and see what of those things there is something you could envision to work with us, be it, I mean, just subscribing to the news and further distributing them, or spreading the word by ordering some promotion material, spreading that in your local community, at your school or university, or put that in the library. Join our local meetings, discuss free software topics with others who are interested in that, or join us at when we give speeches or when we have booths and discuss topics with us, give us feedback there. Join one of those local groups or hackathons with the web team, as you just mentioned it. It's something where the website, it's very important for us to, as it's often the first thing people see when they haven't heard about FSFE before. So our web team really needs help there. We have a large team of translators and proofreaders. So we want to make sure that all the information we have out there is available for people in their mother tongue, so that also the people who don't speak English at all or not so confident, that they can also understand what free software is about. So that's very important to help us there. And yeah, there are several other points how you can participate there. And so for us, the most valuable thing you can do is that you actually participate. And if you don't have time for that, then the next most valuable thing for us is to become a supporter and financially support us, so that we can pay the people who are working for the organization, so that some of the tasks which have to be performed can then be done by paid staff.
Very interesting, very interesting. Because without these volunteers, the FSFE wouldn't survive, I suppose. So it's almost good to see that people simply chip in. And needless to say, as Matthias just said, you don't have to be a techie. As a matter of fact, the first people that I ran into here in the Rhein-Main region, as in the FSFE Rhein-Main, which is the local organization here in the Rhein-Main area, that was actually Guido is a primary school teacher or secondary school, but I'm dead sure that he's a teacher.
No, he's actually not a teacher, but he coordinated our education activities for a long time.
I thought he was a teacher. Maybe I'm wrong.
No, he's working for another institution, so okay. not connected to education facility. But he was always very interested in this. How can we make sure that children learn how technology works, that they don't just get some product training, that they understand that they can actually shape the world around them, so that they should not be educated to be just passive consumers of technology, but that technology is there to fit their needs, that they can actively shape how this will look like and change things to fit their vision of a future. So that was very important to him, and that's why he was always summarizing what is happening about free software in education, posted news updates about this for a long time. So then afterwards he was then also setting up this local group in the Rhein-Main area. But he's actually not a teacher.
Interesting. So. I thought he was. Maybe I'm wrong. I'm getting old. But the bottom line is, actually, people, if you want to get involved, just check out the website. There is a local organization very close to you. And all of these local organizations, I think, are listed on the website, right?
Yes. Yes. You find them on the website then. And if there is none, then, I mean, one of the advantages at the current time is that our local groups, they all meet online at the moment. So while it has a lot of disadvantages, at least there is this advantage to join some of the groups and see what they are discussing there, and meet others who might be like-minded as you and how a future should look like, and then see what you can contribute there. And yeah, beside the local groups, I mean, as I said, there are also other groups there working on different topics. I mean, we did not yet go into all the other areas of work where we are depending on volunteers. There are volunteers at the moment working on the relation of artificial intelligence and free software, and we published an article about that just a few weeks ago. So if you are interested in this topic, get involved there. We are at the moment working a lot about router freedom in Europe, so that you can choose your own router and the ISP cannot decide about that. And so we are working with many different organizations in the different EU countries there. So if you hear about that, please check out our website and see what might be the status in your country. We have an activity package there, what you can do to help us to promote the idea of a router freedom in your country at the moment. There are other activities like Free Your Android, where we want to help people to have a mobile phone with as much free software as possible. So that's all something where you can get involved. And many different other activities which you might want to get engaged in.
Yeah, that sounds great. I mean, presumably, the router freedom and phone freedom are some of the things that people touch every day. But if to bring your message to the biggest possible audience and into the future, I guess are you doing much with schools in terms of educating people there and what? Because obviously, you know, the kids today, they use their proprietary stuff quite a lot, let's put it that way. So is there a big job to do there still, do you reckon?
And sorry, before you answer that, Matthias, I just want to chip in. Freeing your local robot is always a good idea in terms of Android. Sorry, go ahead, Matthias.
So, I mean, for the in the education area, in the last time there was a less activity than I would wish that the FSFE is doing. And so if people are interested there, that would be really great, because I mean, that's the downside, of course, with that sometimes there are people who are dedicated, they work on something, and then there might be some circumstances that they don't have as much time anymore. And if you then don't have a larger group working on the topic, it could happen that, the work an organization can do on a certain topic then also decreases. And that's the point there that, I mean, FSFE depends a lot on people who say that this is an important topic for me and I want to invest time into this. And now with the education area, if you're interested in this, reach out to us so we can see with your motivation, what you would like to do, and with the skills you have, what can be done there. We have one activity which is tailored for teenagers and children's, which we will start at the end of the year, and but that's something which is at the moment still in the phase of further defining exactly how to do that. But yeah, there's something upcoming there. One of the best ways to make sure that when you're interested in this area that you know when this is starting is that you go on fsfe.org, and then there is a blue box there where you can subscribe to our email updates, and then you will receive updates from us, not like every day, not like every second day, but some messages like once a month, sometimes two or three times a month, something like that. And then you will not miss it when there are some updates there, and there's an activity where you can participate.
That's great. Thank you. So, sorry, Chris, did you want to ask the question about the future of the FSFE?
I was just going there, actually. Thank you for the hint. Matthias, given the short time span that the FSFE has been around, let's put it this way, joke aside, where do you see this going in the next, say, 75 years, or maybe even longer?
So, I'm really bad in predicting the future. I think that one of the crucial points will be if we accomplish it, that people will understand that software freedom is a crucial freedom for our society, and that it's equally important as other freedoms we have in our society, like freedom of speech, freedom of the press, freedom of assembly. So that software freedom is also one of those rights which is essential in a society which is depending more and more on a digital infrastructure. And I think that's something which in the next, when you now say 75 years, that's definitely a perspective where I think we should ensure that this is codified also in the constitutions, in the laws of the different countries, that this is a human right, that you are allowed to use the software for any purpose, that you can study how it works, talk and discuss with others about what is in this software, that you share it with others, and that you improve it and adapt it to your own needs. That this is something which is crucial and independent of all the other activities we are doing, all the other fights we are doing there. I think that's one of the most crucial points we have to achieve, and definitely one of the things where for the FSFE I want to continue to work, that people realize that this is an important step societies should go, and that they then actually implement this.
Interesting perspective. Especially if that software has been funded with public money, of course. As in, everybody's a taxpayer at the end of the day, right? So, yes. Matthias, is there any question that we haven't touched upon that you maybe want to elaborate before we close this off?
So many topics. I would say, if one of the listeners has another question which we didn't cover here, then reach out to us. And we have on this contribute page, there are several channels you can use to discuss different topics. As I said, you can subscribe to the updates there. The FSFE also does a podcast with topics around free software. So sign up to those channels to get more information from us, browse on our website. And if you have questions, reach out to us, reach out to the local groups, if there are any close to you, or to the teams working on this. I think that's probably the best there to, I cannot predict what questions might all come up for you. So just do it this way and reach out to us and start a discussion with us.
Should you be interested in open source and free software? And needless to say, if you weren't, you wouldn't probably be listening to this podcast. Matthias, that has been more than interesting. Thank you very much. Martin, yes, we have to do POXes. Martin, you want to go ahead and explain what a POX is?
Oh, yes, of course. Yes, we do this with all our guests. And we're not going to ask you what your favorite...
No escape, yes.
Not going to ask you what your favorite Linux editor is, but instead, the Pox of the Week is basically an event, a movie, a film, a book, a piece of software that you came across in the last week that has really impressed you in one way or another. Let's put it that way.
So anything goes.
Anything goes, yeah.
Okay, so I'm now really disappointed that
you can also mention your favorite Linux editor if you want to.
But only if you've used it in the last week.
Actually, I just used it this morning to confirm that that I will be there with you and we can do the recording. So yeah, but I will now not talk about the editor of the beast, and instead, as you asked me, I'll go and choose a book which I recently read and this week already recommended three times again, and the weeks before also recommended several times, and which I already now bought as a gift and sent it to several people. So I yeah. It's not about free software directly, but it's about it's about the your understanding how other people are, and so the book is it's by Rutger Bregman. It's called Humankind: A Hopeful History. And so that's something which I think if you're working for free software and if you're in whatever way you are contributing for free software, writing free software, translating, maintaining, promoting, documenting, and so on. So whatever you do there, I think it's a really great book to help you see why it's good to share information with others, because the others around you are good people most of the time.
That has been more than insightful, Matthias. And of course, the links will be in the show notes. Martin, what's your POX?
Following on from my previous POX, having moved on from Live on Mars, we have Ashes to Ashes next, which is set in the 80s. So similar.
This theme. Is close to the Handmaid's Tale, right?
Not quite.
No? Okay. Links, of course, will be in the show notes.
Indeed. What about yourself?
First of all, full credits have to go to the Great British, / UK Met Office for bringing in the summer early, because apparently we now have a prolonged period of absent rain in the UK, at least 2 days where the sun has been shining and temperatures were above 10 degrees centigrade. So Met Office, if you're listening, full marks. And of course, the second POX that I have is actually a guy called Karl Marx, funny enough, who wrote a very important book called, in German, Das Kapital. If you would translate this, you would end up at the capital, which of course doesn't translate, because that would be the central city of a country. So links will be in the show notes. If you haven't read this, people, please do, if you're interested in the central idea of communism and why this is important to some extent. And unfortunately, Carl, at the time of writing, wasn't aware of free software, because the whole thing hadn't been invented yet. We were looking at, 1800s or something? Sorry, in 1900s, right? If I'm not completely mistaken. So Industrial Revolution time frame, but it's still worth a read because the philosophy behind this text still applies. And with that, I would like to
I think yes. You should mention, having read parts of it during my studies, it's not the easiest read.
No, it's not. And if you manage to read in German, full marks to you. Of course, translations are available, but there's a little bit of a learning curve involved. So, but it's still a valid text for any philosophical background about the whole movement in terms of why goods should be distributed and all the rest of it. And don't mind the few flaws of the first implementations. as in software, it takes a few iterations, yes, to get it right. But apparently people are still working on this. Jokes aside, no, Matthias, thank you very much for being on the show.
Indeed,
Martin, you want to, yes,
thank
you want to,
yeah, that's great. Yeah.
You want to close it off?
Okay, cool. No, thank you very much, Matthias. I think the FCE is doing some brilliant work here, and I'm sure there'll be lots more to come in the future. And by that, thank you.
Thanks to the both of you, and thanks a lot to all the people out there contributing to free software.
This is the Linux In-Laws.
You come for the knowledge,
but stay for the madness.
Thank you for listening.
This podcast is licensed under the latest version of the Creative Commons license, tab attribution share alike. Credits for the intro music go to Blue Sea Roosters for the song Salute Margo, to Twin Flames for their piece called The Flow, used for the segment intros, and finally to Celestial Ground for their song Sweet Justice, used by the Dark Side. You find these and other ditties licensed under Creative Commons at Jamendo, a website dedicated to liberate the music industry from choking copyright legislation and other crap concepts. Given the fact that all these events are now happening virtually, it's hard to attend in person. I mean, once, for example, Forstum is back in swing, isn't kind of taking place in Brussels. The idea is actually to bribe Martin's wife so that he gets loose for a weekend and can travel to Brussels. And that's probably the first time we're going to do a podcast actually in person on site.
Yes.
Date to be confirmed.
It's still not sure if Fostem will be the first one, because I mean, if anything else happens again with the pandemic, we could end up and they cancel it. But I really hope that, I mean, also for myself, probably Fostem will be one of the first events again then. So
perfect. I take this as a volunteering contribution that we can actually do the podcast then at the FSFE stand at the booth.
I think it's not the best place to have a conversation where you want to understand your...
It's just about capturing the spirit.
But yeah.
It was worth a try.
We can talk at Fostem again. I think you're doing it very well with the way how you talk. It's very easy for people to also do that remotely. And that's something where it's not everyone's nature that you are naturally laughing a lot and thereby making it very nice atmosphere for people to
Martin,
participate. So.
Our ninth listener. We just interviewed him. Yes, excellent. My time. This is more than encouraging.
we should have recorded this bit.
Richard stepping down again? What's wrong with the equipment, Mr. Visser?
Nothing? Why?
Because there was a lot of background noise when you were talking.
I'm talking now.
It's gone. Did you turn off the Ethereum miners?
No. No, the police did that. You obviously haven't seen that news.
In the last half hour or whatever. Fair enough.
No, it was over the weekend.
Okay. So the wife couldn't do it, but the police could. Excellent. Nice one.
You not seen that?
I wonder.
I sent you a link.
I mean, all the cryptocurrencies took a big hit recently.
Oh, it changes all the time. Yeah.
It does, yes. It's not for the faint-hearted, let's put it this way. But then I only lost 20 million euros, so that's not an awful lot.
Oh, okay.
No, not too sure about it.
It's not too bad, yeah.
Exactly. I hear danger coming up in terms of lame humor and stuff.
Don't worry, you can always cut this out. Yeah.
And that's precisely what I'm worried about, Martin. No Irish nurses, no history, nothing. Oh. No, I'm afraid not. Because that will be kind of...
You'll have to give me some other... Anyway, it's all good. Don't worry.
No, it's not, Martin. That's the point that I'm trying to make here.
It's fine.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HBR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.